Let's see. Health check warning. It's recommended user is 10 gigs local free space. See, it always tells me I need 10 gigs of free space, but I have so much local space.
There's no need to brag about it.
Stupid. Zencastr hurts my brain and my butt. Actually, maybe it's okay now. Health check.
It seems to be fine. It doesn't say your warnings or anything. I feel like I haven't seen you in ages.
You haven't. Can you turn your volume on your microphone up a bit? A tad? Just a wee bit?
A wee smidgeroo?
A wee smidge?
Is that... What was this thing?
Did you read it first before you used it?
Did I? Fuck. That's what... I'm a real man. I don't do that shit.
Correct.
What about that? Is that up?
Yeah, it sounds...
Is that better?
Yeah, it sounds fine. Sounds good. Yeah.
Don't lie to me, man.
No, I just want to hear your beautiful voice.
Don't lie to me.
You sound good. Okay, great.
I feel like I haven't seen you in ages.
It's been...
1 week since you looked at me.
It's been about 3 weeks.
It's been a few weeks, yeah. It's been a crazy few weeks, because I was in Milwaukee for about a week and a half. I got a zit on my nose.
I was going to ask, the quality of this video isn't great, so it looks what you could have got away with was saying that you've been in a fight, because it looks like a graze. But instead, you've gone for the prepubescent truth.
I've gone prepubescent. I think, yeah, it's terrible. I have conceded that the internet at my place is terrible. I have bad internet. I have Spectrum. It's bad. But where I'm moving to Milwaukee, we will have
better
internet.
You're moving to Milwaukee?
You knew this.
Did I? Like, I've been emotionally busy for the last 3 weeks, so... I may have dropped information, yes. Very important information, personal information, and for that.
Well, I guess I haven't really talked about it all that much. I haven't talked about it publicly yet. This is the first time. This is where we're going to talk about it. First time ever is that officially, internet world listeners, I'm moving to Milwaukee at the end of September to move in with my girlfriend for 1 year. And then when she graduates from medical school next year, we're moving back to the West Coast, so it's just for a year.
So that's awesome. Are you excited?
Yes, I'm really ready to get out of LA.
Yeah, man, I bet.
I'm over it. I like LA for a lot of reasons, but I don't think that I'm an LA person. I think that the weather, it's too hot for me. I grew up in the Bay Area, so I'm used to cold and gusty and rainy, and I miss that.
Just come here for a while. Pretty brutal. Be over the moon.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, I'm excited to try to visit the UK at some point because I know it's just exactly like that.
Perfect.
Yeah, so that's going to happen soon. But then, yeah, so Milwaukee will be cool.
Have you guys got to find a place, or are you just going to move into her place?
She's moving out of her because she lives in a studio right now. But we're finding a place. We're going to look for like a house with a backyard so that our dog can run around and not be cooped up inside all day.
White picket fence?
Hopefully not. I'm going to be working with a brand while I'm over there, making YouTube content for them. Nice. I'm also going to be doing the YouTube channel still. I'll be doing the photo department still. I'll be doing this podcast still. It'll be kind of an opportunity to just be in a new place and, not be in LA for a while.
I think that's probably important for everybody for some time, by the sounds of things, when it comes to LA anyway.
I just think that LA has this like pull, everyone who's comes to LA or has this idea about LA, it's very much like very sunny. It does have those things that people think it does, but then I don't think that I care about those things that other people do. Like the very sunny, washed out California dreaming sun flare photos. Like it's not the kind of photographer that I am. Yeah. So
also it gets boring,
It can get boring.
When I lived in Venice, like people were like, "Oh, as a photographer, that must be amazing." And I'd be like, "Well, not really. Like, try and take a photo in Venice that hasn't been taken before. Like,
right?
It's impossible. Like, you either take the tourist photos, which is a shit photograph of a tourist site, or you take the photos of Venice. But every photo of Venice looks like a photo of Venice. Everything's been taken before, and." Sure, you could. I mean, you could do more like condensed, like project work, and really sort of like hone it down and pigeonhole it, the opposite. What's what I'm looking for? I don't know, like find a niche and sort of, you know, photograph that.
Focus on your work.
A focus. But generally, like people get these ideas of places, whether it's LA, New York, Italy, Venice, whatever, like and you end up taking those photos because that's the photographs that are there to take. That's what's available.
Right. I mean, I think that there's a lot of value in living in a place like LA because there are so many people here and the opportunities for collaboration are, you know, it's a lot easier to, I guess, find like-minded people to collaborate with. And I've found that to be true. You know, I have a film photography chat that I've mentioned before that I'm a part of, who are all photographers who shoot film, who are primarily in Orange County or LA, like in this area, within like an hour of here. And I've, you know, had a really great time collaborating with those dudes. I've made some really cool work with them. I've helped them with their work and it's just been really nice. And I think that because I'm in LA and because, you know, so many people live here, that access is a lot. It's a lot easier. And I definitely take advantage of that.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that sort of things just doesn't, well, it might exist here, but not that I'm aware of. So like, it's very much photography to me seems very much like not a solo venture. I obviously am in geographical close quarters and very close contact with the man, the myth, the legend, Kyle McDougall.
Just talking to just now, a minute ago.
Whatever, I was talking to him a couple of days ago as well. So,
whatever, you've actually hung out with him. There's no contest.
I'm also going to hang out with him. Well, I was supposed to hang out with him this week, but it's probably going to be next week now. I don't know. It's weird here. Like, if I want to talk like photography, like I need to like speak to you or Kyle or like Robbie or whatever. Like, and we don't live like no one. I don't know anyone in Oxford that's a photographer.
Mm-hmm. Really? Interesting.
Yeah, dude. I told you you can't even buy 120 film here.
That surprises me, you know.
There's nowhere to buy it. I've got to buy it from camera shops online.
That's strange. It's funny because like the very stark contrast is like here, I almost don't have anybody I can't talk about film with here. Like everybody here is very interested in film and it's very much a lifestyle thing now. And so it's very easy to kind of like fall into those conversations or find people that want to talk about it. Which is good and bad. Sometimes I just don't want to talk about it. And people are just very much, that's all they care about. Some people, it's their identity.
The film. But yeah, this is like what I said to you the other day, that my friend said to me, like, he was asking me about digital lenses, about which lens to get for his Nikon. Mm-hmm. Nikon, as you call it. Nikon, as I call it.
Nikon, as they call it in Japan. It's just, you know.
Whatever. It is what it is, isn't it? Tomato, that's what people say. And I said something about the Nikon 85mm 1.4 FD and how it was just like the best lens. I just adored this thing. I absolutely adored it, the way it rendered. It was beautiful. It was perfect. Unfortunately, I had to sell it for financial reasons, as we all have to do. Mm-hmm. And he said, you don't want to hear your film photography friends, you know, hear you say that. And I was like, I don't really have any like exclusive film photography friends. I've got photographer friends. And I think the ones I sort of hang out with are the ones I speak to when I do. I don't really hang out with them, again, just to reiterate my final point, when the ones I speak to understand that cameras are cameras, film's film, digital's digital. They're tools for jobs. And I don't think that, I don't like the idea of film photography being this like little exclusive club. That's just me personally. I get it. And I can see that why people want to hold on to it and want to be really like snooty about it and ostracize people that shoot digital. But to me, that's a really strange way of seeing photography.
Yeah. And especially because the whole premise of film, it's kind of like, well, the resurgence of it is very much based around community, you know, like everyone talks about the film community as if it's like this, you know, homogenous thing. And it's funny because I'll hear people talking about it and in the same breath, you know, be shitting on people who don't shoot film or people who shoot a film they don't like or whatever. Like it's almost like there's a club that people feel that they have carte blanche to shit on other photographers. It's
But also what gives you the golden pass? What gives you the validation to be in that club and to be, you know, sort of pop yourself on a pedestal above people that shoot digital.
You have to have an Instagram full of crispy bangers and then you're in.
But is it like, you know, I mean, it's not to do with your work. It's sure shit not to do with your work. It's just to do with the fact that you put film in a camera. Is that what gives you that? Because I don't give a shit about that. Like, you can take a million terrible photographs with film. Mm-hmm. Like,
which I have.
God knows. I mean, I've taken loads and loads of no photographs because I've not had to use a camera and I've just wasted film before. But like,
yeah.
I don't know. What qualifies you as a film photographer, this inverted commas, that allows you to the privilege to just shit on other people?
I think it's kind of like any other thing. It's like, I think you used this word the other day. There's this elitism about film photography that I think is omnipresent. It's just kind of, it's hard because it's kind of, it reminds me of like, back when I played hockey, when I was, you know, younger, I played hockey for about 7 years.
Ice hockey.
Yeah. And
I played ice hockey too.
Did you really?
Yeah, and wait for it. Me and Kyle were talking about that the other day. We can talk about hockey together now.
We can do a hockey talk. We should do a episode where it's a hockey talk.
Or we should start a team.
Me, you, and Kyle?
Just me, you, and Kyle. I'm not playing in goals. We need to find a goalie.
What was your position?
I played up front, scored all the goals.
Power forward?
I was not powerful.
I was a winger because I was big and I could.
I played hockey technically on the wing, but like.
So you're like a forward, like a right forward or something, or left forward?
Yeah, I was fast. That was my thing. I was fast and I could score.
I was not fast. I was steady. No, it wasn't fast. But what I was going to say, my whole analogy with hockey is that I grew up poor and I didn't. My dad bought all my hockey gear for me, but he, you know, didn't have a lot of money either. So we didn't get to buy all the best hockey gear. We got to buy, I had like the club brand version of everything. Cause like the hockey place I played at, you know, they had adult leagues and they also had like some like regional stuff. And so they were like a pretty decent ice rink and they had like a club store that was like really well stocked. They had good stuff. They had like name brand stuff. They had like sticks that were like the custom sticks that are like a player signature or whatever. They had like, you know, that higher end stuff and like uniforms, but they also had like the lower end stuff. And I could only afford the lower end stuff. And then I would have people on my team talk down to me because I used the cheap stuff.
That shit's horrible, man. I hate that stuff. It makes
me feel bad. It made me feel bad because it was like, guys, we're on a team. Like, we're supposed to be on a team together. We're not supposed to be shitting on each other. You know, we're supposed to be like helping each other out. Yeah. And I didn't feel, I felt very disillusioned with that team for a long time because I wasn't really recognized for my skill or for my dedication or for like how hard I practiced. Like I was recognized like, oh, that's the kid on our team who has the cheap shit. Yeah. And that kind of defined my experience for that time period. And it's the same kind of thing. Like we get people, you know, in the film community who just want to participate and they feel bad because they don't have, you know, an expensive camera. Like I was talking to my girlfriend who has been, you know, taking pictures and traveling a lot. She used to work for a travel agency and she's always had a camera with her. She has a digital Ricoh that she used to take with her all the time.
Oh man, that was one of my first digital cameras.
Yeah. And she takes great pictures and she, when we met, she got more into film because I'm obviously into film. And she had told me a couple times that she felt really bad that she had a Pentax K1000, that it was like a student camera and wasn't good enough. Like,
who gives a shit? It's a great camera.
Well, that's kind of what it's hard because I tried to say that to her, like, no, the K1000 is like a legendary camera. Like that camera started careers, but you look around and everyone has, you know, RZ67s or Pentax 67s or Leicas or whatever. And you look at what you have and you're like, I'm not good enough because I can't afford those cameras. But in the reality, it's like, it's more impressive what you can do with a camera that
100%,
you know, whatever camera you have, not the camera that costs more money. I just feel bad because she'll get down on herself being like, I can't do what I want with this cheap camera, you know, like, or she'll feel bad that she has a cheap camera, like embarrassed or something. I'm like, dude, no, you should like wear that.
No, I think that it's one of these things where, and I used to do it with digital gear, I'd buy, you know, I'd make sure I had a 2470, not because I needed the focal lens, but because it was a big looking lens. And then once you put the lens hood on it, it looked massive. And then you would put your grip on, the battery grip that you didn't need for no fucking reason. You stick that on the camera to make yourself look like a professional. And nowadays, I never use a good battery grip. I never use a lens hood. And like, because I use gear that works for me. And like, behind me, I've got a Pentax 6.7 and an RB67. I do own those cameras, but I own those cameras having been a photographer for years. And like, I know also at any point I might have to sell one of those cameras.
Well, we also know that like only the resurgence of film has caused these cameras to go up in price. These are not expensive cameras. The Pentax 6.7, the first one I bought with a lens and everything with a metered prism, it was $400, which is a lot, but it's not a lot compared to like other things, you know, those two cameras behind you, they are only expensive now because of the resurgence of film, not because they're expensive.
Yes, and the thing is that like I don't own those two cameras because I wanted to have a Pentax 6.7 and an RB67. I wanted a Pentax 6.7. I got the Pentax 6.7. I wanted the Pentax 6.7 because it's an SLR and it takes great portraits. That was the reason I wanted it. Mm-hmm. I got the RB because I couldn't do the focusing distance of the Pentax 6.7. I couldn't get close enough to the subjects that I wanted to be able to do. Yeah. And I wanted that bellows focus. And that was kind of that was literally the main reason for getting the RB, was to shoot closer portraits. So like, I've got them both for practical reasons, not for clout. Whereas I feel like some people just collect cameras. Like, you know, I've got a Mamiya, you know, I've got a Mamiya 7, I've got a Pentax 6.7, I've got an RB, I've got an RZ. It's like, you don't fucking need all those cameras.
Right. For me, I mean, I wasn't going to like, what am I talking about? I wasn't going to bring it up. What I wanted to say was that there isn't a lot of inherent classism when it comes to film photography, and specifically the kind of cameras that people end up purchasing or putting, or at least putting like any kind of like importance on. So I'll preface this by saying Leica cameras are great. Leica makes fantastic cameras. They always have. Well, when you messaged me earlier this week and you were like, this is what I want to talk about on the pod, I was like, you did not know. You know exactly what you're doing, because we both agree on this topic. But there's nothing wrong with Leica cameras as a camera. They make fantastic cameras. They're great to use. They take good pictures of anything else. They make great glass, legendary glass. A lot of filmmakers use Leica glass to do movies because Leica just knows how to make good glass. The problem with Leica, and I think a lot of people and a lot of Leica owners specifically forget to or don't remember or don't concede to, is that Leica's and their advertising in the 50s and 60s and 70s will attest to this as well. Leica cameras are status symbols. They always have been. James Bond had a Leica. You know, celebrities carry Leicas. It's always been a symbol of people who have. It's always like, I have money, 100%. Therefore I have this Leica. Mm-hmm. And so I know that there are Leica owners out there who that's not their intention, who want the camera specifically because of its size, the shape, the way it works, whatever. And I know that to be true, but it is disingenuous, I think, for a lot of Leica owners to disregard that fact. And I feel like there is a lot of inherent classism when it comes to the film photography community and what the expectations are, especially the unsaid, not talked about expectations, that make people feel bad. A lot of people feel really bad that they can't afford to play the game like some people can. And I mean, buying, not to mention that buying and processing film costs money. It costs money, and it costs a lot of money, especially if you do it a lot. I process dozens of rolls of film every week, and it costs a lot of money, but I have a built-in, like I work, I have a built-in budget for that so that I can do it, because it's part of my job.
I think as well, one of the I think the availability of information and access to film photography through like YouTube and stuff is fantastic. I think that there's not nearly enough transparency, which really bugs me. And I'm talking from the bigger names. I'm not going to name names, but like, you know, there's Leica users in there. And like, that wasn't a cough. That was a genuine clear my throat.
Right, I know.
And it makes people who are starting off feel like they cannot take good photographs unless they are using this type of equipment. Mm-hmm. And I think that having owned a Leica M6 briefly and selling it because I didn't like it, and you've shot an M6, like, I could take photos as good within, you know, with a K1000, in my opinion. Like,
absolutely. Like,
I literally could. The only difference is going to be the sharpness of the glass. And quite frankly, I don't shoot film for that.
Yeah, I don't shoot film for sharpness either. But
so, the thing, so like, I'm kind of over it. And like, but at the same time, if I'm completely fucking honest, and I've said this before as well, like, if I had some money, I'd buy an M6 again.
I like the earlier Leicas, the M2, the M3. Probably, I think the M2 is the one with the 35 millimeter frame lines. I'm not sure which one's which, but one of the early ones. I like those because they're still relatively, they're affordable, relatively. You can get a body, like an M2 and M3 body, like a single stroke for like $900 in pretty good user condition. And they're very utilitarian. They don't have like a light meter. They don't have like all this extra shit. And it's not the most sought after, right? So you're going to be able to get one for cheap. My whole plan at some point was to buy one of those cameras, and then get like a Voigtlander lens, like a 35 millimeter, because that's those Voigtlander lenses are killer, and they're priced.
If you were to buy them and not put them on like a Leica, which then sort of it downgrades the quality of the Voigtlander lens. If you just had a Voigtlander lens, you'd be like, this is such a beautiful lens, and then you feel like for some reason, because it's going on, like, it's not good enough to be on a Leica, but it's like,
I've had people be like, ew, Voigtlander lens on an M6. It's just like, are you joking? Like,
yeah, but the M6 is the body's the shit part. It's just a body.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, the Leica thing, M6 like, body is, it's just a box. Like, it's not like, the Leica glass is what's pricey and amazing. Like, an M6 body is just, it's a fucking camera body.
Yeah. Like, it's frustrating because, you know, I told that to my friend and he was just like, dude, why don't you just get an M6 and like a real like a lens? And it's like, because dude, unlike you, I don't have, even if I did have disposable income, even if I did, you know, crawl out of poverty and were able to afford stuff like that, like I still wouldn't treat my money that way. I still would buy things for practical purposes because I grew up with a different idea of the value of money. And so I don't have like a frivolous, like I have bought cameras, like I buy cameras pretty often that I also have to sell, unfortunately. Like I sold my Pentax 645N, the camera that I really love, because I needed money, and that was like the straight up of it. I couldn't afford to keep it at the time, and so I decided to sell it. But the cameras that I do buy, I'm either buying them at a bargain cost because they're at KEH for like a bargain price, or someone is selling it because it's missing something or whatever. Like I'm not spending the full market value for a camera most of the time because I'm usually going after the ugly ones or the beat up ones or whatever. And so,
and that's even the thing, I find that like the quality of, like, you know, you buy the ones that are beaten up and, you know, they downgrade the price considerably because they're like, it's got signs of use. It's like, it's a 50-year-old camera. If it doesn't, I'm going to be slightly worried.
Like, right. It should be. Yeah.
As long as there's no like fungus on the lens or like, then I'm like, I'll buy the shittiest looking one. I don't care.
Well, that's what I think. That's the thing, is like, there's a double-edged sword with the market. It's like the market is going to take the nice, perfect ones, and they're going to price those at the premium. They're going to take the ugly ones and price those at a bargain. And part of me hates that because, you know, that's just capitalism being weird. But then the other part of me is like, okay, good. Then I'll buy the ugly ones because I'm not precious with my cameras. Like, they're tools. I am both exactly. My F2s are beat up to a degree, but I think it makes them look cool.
My 6.7's battered. Both of them are like battered cameras. And I like them like that. Like, I prefer them like that. That's why I would never get an RZ because it's a plastic looking. I've got no interest in it. There's no romanticism about that camera to me. Like, the RB is where it's at. Like,
I just shot my friend's RZ this last week, and, you know, it's funny because the shutter mechanism, like the mirror, I mean, in the camera.
For any UK listeners, he said mirror.
So the shutter mechanism, or I'm sorry, the mirror.
You said Russian, mirror.
Oh my God. The mechanism sounds identical to an RB67, which is funny, but the whole body feels different. Like, everything's very plasticky and like it's very like it's got a different feel, and you can't really beat that camera up in the same way because our RB body is metal. It's gonna wear differently. RZ is different, and there's nothing wrong with the RZ camera. It's just like I don't have that same connection with it because it is a luxury item to me, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I think that there doesn't need to be. I mean, people learn it on their own, I suppose. But I think my concern is that film photography seems unattainable to people. And it's because of a lack of transparency, I think.
I don't think it's the film photography in general. I think it's kind of like the acceptance of the club itself feels unattainable. Like, being one of the cool kids. Because to be one of the cool kids, you have to have like a cool camera. And if you don't have a Contax T2, or if you don't have an RZ67, or if you don't have what else is the fancy, you know, Leica, whatever MP, then you're like, you're just a photographer. But if you have one of those cameras, then you're going to get a bunch of followers and you're going to get all the whatever.
But that's the thing, you will get all the followers. And it's like, that's the apparent, like, you know, that's the
it's obviously thing. Not just that. There's, I mean, like, there are people that I know who shoot, like, let's see, Brian Chorsky. I don't know if you're familiar with him. I think his main camera is a Mamiya 645 1000S, which is a pretty cheap 645 camera. His work is gorgeous. Like, woo, like, he's got some really nice work. But he just uses a cheap medium-format camera that he bought, and he's done some, you know, he does like work with brands and he does work with like other stuff like that. But, it's funny because I see people like that and I'm like, oh, there's a great example, a really good example of like someone who grinds and who works really hard in their photography and like has a really great style and has obviously does brand work and does all sorts of creative endeavors. And they're using like a very, very affordable medium format camera, but like I never see anyone talking about Brian Chorsky's camera. But they do talk about Willem's camera and Joe's camera and all these other people's cameras. Right. And it's like, yeah, but what about what they're doing with those cameras? Like, why do we care so much? I know why I care about cameras. I think mechanically, design wise, they're fascinating. I think from a mechanical standpoint, cameras are fascinating. And the reason for that is I just really have been drawn to high quality design for my whole life, which is why I landed on the F2, because the F2 is one of the best made cameras ever made. I mean, regardless of what you think about Leica, or I'm not sorry, Nikon, regardless what you think about Nikon or what you think about Nikon film cameras, you can't deny.
Their cameras are like, to me, like, I've never owned one, but I've shot them. There is nothing about those cameras that I don't absolutely adore.
Yeah.
Physical feedback you get from those cameras.
Totally.
Is amazing.
Yeah, it's great. You know, and then it just so happened to be still you can still get a Nikon F2 in like very good condition for around $100, which blows my mind. That camera's so good. Like, why isn't it more expensive? I mean, don't be more expensive, please. But, you know, but that camera is very like blue collar run of the mill, right? It's not flashy. Same with the RB67 was that way, but it's become really popular now. But before, you know, I'd pull out my RB and people would be like, ooh, that's cool. But like, you know, it wasn't as cool as whatever the RZ or whatever.
Which to me is nuts because mechanically I still know, like, I mean, obviously I know how cameras work, but like, to me, it's all the romanticism of it all for me. Like it's the tangibility, it's the feel of a film camera. It's the feel of the RB. Like I would never buy an RZ because I've got no interest in holding a plastic box to take a photograph. Sure. I want an RB because I want metal and I want it to be clunky and hard and I want it to feel that way. That's what I'm like with cameras. But I can still have that magpie attitude, definitely, which is like, oh, there's a shiny looking thing that I might need.
But there's nothing wrong with liking those shiny things. It's just that I think that there's a very intense focus on those shiny things in the film community. Mm-hmm. And I think that causes people to be dysmorphic about what they have. And I would love to see photographers with YouTube channels, not calling anyone out specifically, but I want to see some YouTubers owning some cheaper cameras and like actually doing work with them. Like
that's one of the great things.
Literally, go ahead.
But I think that's one of the great things about your channel is that you're using cameras that like, you know, like
that I can afford.
That you can afford. But then, you know, you're not in a financial position to be buying, you know, M6s and stuff. And also you don't particularly want one. So like it's nice to see somebody with, you know, the sort of everyman budget and what you can go and buy with that and what you can do with it, because you shoot great work and you shoot great work with you know, normal gear.
Thank you. I want it to, that's my whole goal when I started my channel, was I wanted it to look attainable. Like I wanted someone to look at me and look at my work and be like, oh, I could do that. Like I don't want people to look at my work and be like, oh, he's so good. Like I can never, like I don't want anyone to ever look at my work and think that. I want people to look at my work and be like, oh, that is something that is cool and I want to do it and I'm going to do it. Like, that's what I want people to do. And you know, I don't care. I literally don't care about anyone's videos about what they did with their Mamiya 7 or their whatever expensive camera. Like I almost don't watch any photo YouTube videos anymore.
I don't,
except really. For a few. So there's a couple. I'm actually going to shout out a couple of YouTube videos YouTubers that I do watch very often still. Obviously, Kyle McDougall, I watch all the time. Grainy Days, even though he does have a fair bit of expensive cameras.
the full house bingo card of expensive cameras.
Yeah, but knowing him personally and knowing how he approaches photography, I don't think he falls in the same.
Yeah, he seems like a super nice dude. He makes me laugh.
I'm right with him. And then there's another guy, Robbie Maynard. Now, Robbie Maynard is shooting mostly large format, doing 4x5. But he has, I think he has like a relatively inexpensive 4x5 setup. Like it's not the most expensive one. It's like a pretty affordable one. But he doesn't obsess over it. He just goes out and just shoots. And like,
yeah.
I'm not in love with all of the photos he makes, but most of the stuff that he does is really cool. Mm-hmm. He's obviously very passionate about it. And he just takes the time to go out and make cool pictures and talk about how fun it is for him to do it. And I think that's really great. Like, that's what I care about, you know? And like, he doesn't care about trying to get subscribers or like who he's impressing with his camera. He's just like making work, and that's cool. I'm gonna butcher her name, Corinne Mayoka. She's from Germany. Mm-hmm. But she's done some, you know, she's been doing her channel for about a year and she has some really cool videos, but she does like, you know, the Bronicas. She did a Bronica video. She did what else? She's done like Lomachrome Purple. Like she has a Leica M6, but like, you know, she's very down to earth as far as like YouTubers go. And I'm going on a tangent here, but the point is I don't want to see any more. I just don't want to see any more. Look at this expensive camera video review.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I don't care. Exactly. I don't care.
I think, what have I been watching on YouTube? I've been watching food stuff. That's what I watch.
Dude, I've been watching like gamer stuff.
See, I don't like computer games. I've been watching I rewatched like all of Fuck That's Delicious, and then I and then I've been watching The Pizza Show. You ever watched The Pizza Show?
Yeah.
Pizza Show's great.
Pizza Show's really good.
Since the collapse of my relationship, I'm going to put it that way. I've been looking for displacement activities, and one of them is to completely ignore veganism. So I've been thoroughly enjoying just not being a vegan for.
You're no longer vegan
for the last 3 weeks, mate. Fucking hell! No.
What have you been eating? First off, how long have you been vegan?
About a year and a half.
Okay, so what did you start? What did you do? What did you start eating? What's the first thing you ate that wasn't vegan?
I'll tell you what the first thing I ate was. It was after seeing Idols. I ate a kebab.
Oh, how was it?
It was great. I thought about that, all the poor little lambs and the way that they'd been then squashed onto a skewer and then rotated slowly on a spit in the back of somebody's van for God knows how long. And I thought, sounds tasty.
Can't beat that. A good kebab. It's hard. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's a good, I think that that's a better coping mechanism than others, I would say.
Well, that's it. You see, you know, as an alcoholic in recovery, I had 2 days of vaping.
Oh, right. You were vaping. That's right. Did you give up on that?
I gave up on vaping. Yeah. Because I realized quite quick. Yeah. I phoned Christopher one day, while I was driving somewhere. I can't remember where it was. Don't worry. I was on like car speaker phoney type thing. And,
you were working, I think, right?
I was on my way to do some work thing. Yeah. And, I basically called you just to say, just so you know,
I've taken up vaping.
I think there was quite a lot of abuse. I think it wasn't even abuse. It was almost as if I'd started drinking again. It was just like, oh no. But the next morning I was walking down the road and I actually like just took out my pocket and threw it in the bin. I was like, what am I doing? Like,
that's actually funny. That's actually really funny. I forgot that you told me that, and I just it gone out of my head, and then to hear that you just binned it the next day, that's pretty funny.
Dude, like, don't get me wrong, like, it's quite a nice habit. Like, it tastes quite nice, feels quite nice. Mm-hmm. It's just that, unlike smoking a cigarette where it's still timelessly cool, vaping makes you look like a dick.
Yeah, there's an optics problem with vaping.
Yeah, as an aesthetically driven man like myself, you know, I should really have been like, straight away, literally, it was just, fuck all to do with my health. It was like, I look like an absolute FUD. So,
well, I mean, what I was kind of thinking is, like, if you're going to go full into it, you might as well just buy a Subaru WRX and, like, go full in, you know? Like, drive a tuner car and vape big clouds.
What is that? like the whole camera thing, we're definitely overestimating my wealth. I currently live in a studio right now as well. So that's not going to be happening. But yeah. When I do, if I do come into money, I will be buying, camera wise, I will buy a 4x5.
Hey, the 4x5 is attainable.
Have you still got your Speed Graphic?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I got a bunch of film for it too. Like, I've just been so busy going back and forth from Milwaukee and doing work that I haven't had a chance to do any real 4x5 stuff. But as I'm gearing up to leave California, I'm going to be doing a project on 4x5.
Nice.
I'm also doing a trip with Jason of Grainy Days and Caleb of Bad Flashes. We're going to go to the Salton Sea before I leave, and we're going to do some stuff there. So I thought that'd be a cool chance to test out the 4x5 as far as like landscape type stuff. I still got it. It's still kicking.
I'm excited.
It's really fun. I love it. 4x5. I think you're going to love 4x5. It's very cool because it's a super different methodology, and it's interesting. It's kind of like getting back into photography again, because it's like you kind of got to relearn some stuff.
Yeah,
it's cool. It's cool.
I'm super excited about it. And I know a guy that's a professional photographer that shot like a shit ton of it, of large format, like professionally and however long, over decades. So he'll help me out.
Awesome. I'm not done. I'm just going to say I'm not done talking about Leicas. I'm not done talking about classism. We didn't get through it all yet.
All right, let's go back to it.
I feel like we've got more to say. Well, I was going to say too, like, I think that, like,
we can cut this bit. We can cut this bit and put it at the end, or just cut it and do it again in the end.
Yeah, that's true. I was going to say, you know, what was I going to say?
Do you think that, like classism within photography is one of these things that, do you think it deters people from taking it up?
Yes, and this is what I will say. Whenever you have an interest that a group kind of gathers around, you're going to have these microcosms of systematic racism or prejudice, because that's what happens when you have like that kind of thing. Like, so with gaming, like I kind of mentioned that a minute ago, like I've been watching YouTube videos about gaming, and specifically there's a video game called Rust on Steam. And it basically is a survival game. You're dropped onto this island with nothing but a torch and a rock. And you have to go farm resources like wood and stone and metal. And then you have to like build a little base, like a house to live in and be safe. And you have to like do all the stuff. And then you build up weapons and stuff so you can attack other people or defend yourself from other people. And like it's this society thing that you like build. It's like actually really fun and cool and like a total time suck that I've been kind of like getting into because I've had some free time. But there is that thing with gaming where there are people who are the cool kids or the, you know, people who are like esteemed, or people are like, it's like the video card that you have to get to be the best. You know, if you don't have this video card, then you're not going to have good enough whatever video settings, and you're not going to be able to, I don't know, like, you know, there's like, there's everything, every little thing has that kind of like insular like rule book where it's like, if you're not doing this, then you're not going to be the cool person, right?
Do you also think that like there's becoming a area where it's like there's now there's almost like a tick sheet to be a successful photographer? Like the idea of just being a hobbyist is becoming more and more like obscure, like that you have to like, you have to have these cameras, you have to be on like these forums or this Instagram page, or you have to like, you know, have a YouTube channel to go with it, or da da da. You can't just, you know, pick up a camera, any old camera, and go and shoot it.
Yeah, and I think part of that is like the hustle culture thing we talked about before, where it's like you can't just enjoy something. Like if you're doing something and not making money, then you're just wasting time. Or you're leaving money on the table.
And I'm wasting a fuck ton of time.
I mean, that's how I felt with my YouTube channel and with my photography for a long time. Like if I wasn't like monetizing it in some way, you know, and I think that people genuinely feel that way. They want to be a hobbyist. They want to like take photography for fun and they want it to be like a hobby. But then they feel this pressure to get to a certain level where they're making money or they're getting jobs or they're getting recognition, and it takes the fun out of it. And I've been to that point, and it's gotten to the point where I compare myself to like people who have like 25K, 45K, you know, 100K subscribers or followers. I'm comparing myself to them. And it's like, well, I shouldn't compare myself to them. These people are social media hobbyists, right? Yeah. I'm actually working in the field. I don't have the time to build a social media following like that because I'm working, and there's no better. Like, I'm not better than them for that, and they're not better than me for that. We're just different.
Yeah.
Do I wish I had more recognition for my work? Yeah, sure. But I also recognize that, like, you have to put in a shitload of work to get to that point.
But what would the recognition you would like? What would that be? How would that manifest itself? What is it?
Well, I think that there are people that have that kind of recognition where they're getting, like, jobs from Instagram. Okay. You know, like they're getting like job offers, or they're getting to like, or they're getting to like,
you don't, you know, mean, you don't mean you want 10,000 people a day saying your photo's great. You want
No. I would like people who like my work to be able to enjoy it however they feel like enjoying it, whether that means they look at my Instagram or they look at my website or they look at my YouTube channel or a combination of whatever. There's no exceptions to that. Like, I don't need people to follow me to like enjoy my work. Like, you can enjoy my work without following any of my social media. Like, you just don't have to. Like, it's just that's the truth of it. I just, you know, when you do something that you hold valuable, you want people to recognize the value in it and like, you know, say something like this is good or like, just be there to view it or whatever. And like, as a person who put a lot of time and effort into photography and my YouTube channel, you know, I would enjoy more recognition. And then in that recognition, I mean like brands or like, work opportunities where people would be like, hey, your work is good. We would love to use you. We'd like to have your talents for this project.
Or your name associated with our brand or whatever else. Like,
sure. And like,
monetization doesn't have to be the direct, like from the source money. It can be like, it can manifest itself in other ways.
Yeah. Cause I've been thinking about my YouTube channel and the fact that I have ads on my channel, on my videos, because those ads are monetized and I get a little bit of money from YouTube every month. But I've been thinking about it, you know, like, do I want to be squeezing? Or I've had people be like, oh, you should make a Patreon for your YouTube channel so that people can pay for like behind the scenes content and you can get more money. And I was thinking about like, oh, that's kind of a cool idea.
And then you've got to make behind the scenes content.
Well, the thing I thought about was I don't really want to squeeze my followers. I don't want to squeeze the people that enjoy my work for money. You know, like I'd rather be paid by clients than be squeezing my followers. Agreed. Because I wanted my work to always be accessible and free. I wanted people to come to my YouTube channel and be able to for free watch my content and get something from it. And so I don't hold any ill will. I don't think it's wrong for anybody else to have a Patreon if they feel like that's what they want to do, but I don't think that's for me. I've been actually thinking about
I mean that to me, that's a sign of someone that knows who they are. Like,
right. And I'm trying to be more myself as possible because I think that there have been times in my channel's history where I haven't been myself because I'm trying to like pander to a certain audience and I don't want to do that anymore. And then on top of that, like I've been thinking like, okay, I'm getting like $200 a month from YouTube. It's a drop in the bucket as far as like my bills are concerned. Like, and it fluctuates every month. Like sometimes I don't get any money from YouTube for ad revenue. I'm thinking about turning my monetization off for all my videos because I would rather people get to watch my videos ad free, you know, because in the end, I'm not really getting that much money and it's ads are annoying. I've definitely turned videos off because the ad I couldn't skip was like, I don't want to see this. And so I'd go to something else.
Definitely.
I'm for sure definitely getting some of that where people look at my video and be like, oh, this ad, I don't want to do this. And again, I think that like photography belongs to everyone. And I don't think that you should have to pass some test, some coolness test to be involved. And I don't think there should be any gatekeeping or gateways you have to go through to achieve being a photographer. I talked to my girlfriend about this too, where she was like, I'm not really a photographer. I'm like, yes, you are. You own a camera. You make photographs. You're a photographer. She's like, yeah, but I don't like sell my photographs. So I'm like, yeah, that's a professional photographer. If you make your primary income as a photographer, then you're a professional photographer. But that's the only distinction. The distinction is, are you making money? No. Okay. Then you're just a photographer. But if you're making money consistently, you're a professional photographer. But that's the only distinction that matters.
That's literally it. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But if you like photography and you want to make photos and you go out and make photos, whether it's with a phone or a camera or a Game Boy camera or whatever the hell you have, you're a photographer. A photographer is just a person who makes photographs. And that's everyone's right. And I wish that the focus of the community would focus away from what is making the photograph and focus more on who and why and the content of the photograph, because that's what's really interesting. The story of the camera, who gives a shit?
Also, you don't even have to go that deep. Just look at a photograph and go, that's a fucking great photograph. There you go.
Yeah. Some of my favorite photographs, it's like I looked at a photo and I was like, oh, I got to learn more about this photographer. There are photographs. I've never looked at a photograph and been like, I got to find out what camera took this. I've 100%. Never felt that way, which never. Is funny because I definitely covet cameras. Like there are cameras I want. Like,
just a really funny point. I've never ever thought about that. I've never looked at a photo and I wonder what camera that was ever.
Uh-uh. Unless I already knew who took the photo.
And then you know that I like a guy or whatever else. But yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah.
I've never thought, I wonder what Film stock, yeah. I'm not sure about the film stock on that.
I wonder if that was shot on film, and if it was film, what film it was. Mm-hmm. Because I can kind of guess by looking at the composition and looking at the ratio, aspect ratio, like I can kind of guess if it hasn't been cropped, like, oh, that looks like a 6.45, or oh, that looks like a 6.7, or oh, it looks like a Hasselblad because it's a square. You can kind of tell. But like my brain never goes there. My brain just goes like, oh, I wonder if that was like portrait or maybe like Ektar or something. Like it never goes to camera, which is interesting. But some people do think that, which is fine. You can wonder what camera. But
yeah.
Like
I it's funny. It's one of the questions you get asked a lot. I think, well, I used to get asked a lot is what camera did you take that on? And it's like people that ask that question are people that aren't photographers.
Well, I feel like it's usually in casual conversation where you're talking about a photograph with a photographer. It's never that's never my first thought. My first thought is always like, how do they get this?
I remember buying my first sort of like DSLR and like being like so hyped when I got it and being like, oh my God, I've got a DSLR. I'm going to take the best fucking photos. And then I remember taking one and being like, oh, that just looks like every other digital photo I've ever taken. Because like, do you know what I mean? Like a camera is a camera, and like it's about what you do with it. Like that's it at the end of the day. Like, and it's such a boring, monotonous point, but it's just the truth. You can take a great photo with any camera. One of my favorite photos I've ever taken was with a Kodak Funsaver.
Well, you're barely a photographer,
and I am barely a photographer. Like, like I was a photographer, and now I'm sort of a guy that occasionally takes photos. I've been a bit busy, Christopher.
I know you're busy, and you don't have to make any
dealing with my job, dealing with my complete emotional collapse. My vaping took up a lot of time. Yeah. Giving up veganism and hating animals is taking up a bit of time.
This podcast is taking a hard left turn as far as our viewership or listenership.
Anyway. Just in case I need to say it again, next week's pod, Rosie Foster.
Rosie Foster, next week's pod. So make sure you tune in. That's going to be a really good pod. Thank you guys for listening to us rant about cameras. Remember the main point is that if you want to take photos, it doesn't matter what you take photos with. It's just that you take photos. And that if you enjoy talking about gear and you enjoy being a gear geek, that's also great.
It's all fine.
Nothing wrong with that.
Find your homies that you want to talk to about that shit and talk to them about it.
Just don't put value. Don't put value on what camera you're using. Put value on the fact that you got up today and said, I'm going to take pictures, and you picked up a camera.
Put value on yourself.
Love yourself, you idiot.
I can't say things like that sincerely in my accent because it sounds like I'm being sarcastic. Also, if anyone in Scotland heard me say something sincere like just love yourself, I'd get the shit kicked out of me.
Yeah, you really are like the Renaissance man. You're like a man of two worlds, you know? You're like a Scot.
He doesn't drink. I was vegan. He doesn't drink.
You were vegan. You live in the UK. You're a photographer.
I live in England.
And you bleached your hair blonde.
Looks pretty good now, though. It's lighter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does look good. It does look good.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Would you do me?
Look, we talked about this. You know I would.
Yeah.
We can't talk about this on the podcast. Anyway. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Yes, and we shall speak to you, y'all, very, very soon with, Rosie Foster.
Rosie Foster. Go check out Rosie Foster on Instagram. We'll put her Instagram handle in the show notes so you can get a little look at her work ahead of the pod. If you guys have questions for us, if you want to ask us questions, or if you have some suggestions of a topic you want to hear us talk about, you can reach out to either Mike or myself. You can reach out to Spooky Park Bench on Instagram. Or you can reach out to me, Christopher Michael Sturm, on Instagram, or Mike_sim1. What is it?
Oh, I've got about 75 Instagrams. There's Mike Sim Photo, and then there's Mikey Sim 1. Ignore the other one.
Reach out to Spooky Park Bench on Instagram if you have any questions or suggestions. Thank you guys again for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with another amazing episode of high quality fucking podcast content for your ears, your mind, correct, your soul, and your butt.
Yeah. Toodle pip.
Toodle pip.